America's budget deficit is a ticking time bomb, so writes Dr. Gary Wolfram of Hillsdale College. He's on the phone with us right now on Vocal Point. This is Vocal Point, and I'm Jerry Newcomb. And Dr. Wolfram, it's great to have you back on. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Sure. Okay, talk about the deficit. First of all, what is our deficit up to now? About $21 trillion or something like that?
Well, the total debt is about $21 trillion. The deficit, the annual deficit, Congressional Budget Office estimates that in 2019 it will be about $981 billion.
So almost a trillion.
Yes, which is interesting because the first trillion-dollar budget doesn't happen until 1987. That's
wow.
The first time the whole budget gets to $1 trillion. So now we're running trillion-dollar deficits.
That is amazing. Well, what is the budget, the annual budget, about of the United States a year?
Well, the expenditures are in 2019, that is the next fiscal year, are going to be about $4.5 trillion. And the revenues are $981 billion short of that.
Okay, now, did it get any better under Donald Trump as far as the deficit?
No, not really. Because what's driving the deficit, which most people haven't talked a lot about, but what's really driving the deficit is what's called mandatory spending. That is Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and there's other programs that are in statute. That spending happens whether Congress passes a budget bill or not. In fact, if you look at it, 70% of all the budget outlays in 2019 are already there. And that doesn't include net interest on the debt. If Congress didn't even show up or pass any appropriations bill, you'd only be about $380 billion in surplus if they passed nothing. No defense, no infrastructure, no anything.
That is amazing.
Yes.
So you're saying 70% of our budget is already spent, and that's on these golden cows, if you will, Social Security. I mean, you can't touch those things if you're a politician. If you do, it's
correct.
Suicidal, at least at present.
Get this, by 2028, just the mandatory spending alone is going to be 98.5% of the revenue that comes in 2028. That's what CBO estimates. So if you don't address the ill structure of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, you're not going to balance the budget.
Yeah. Wow.
And nobody wants to talk about it.
No. So who basically ultimately has to pay for this stuff? Our children, our grandchildren?
Certainly. And maybe even, your younger brothers, depending on how old you are. Yes, I mean, there was an old, for those of us old enough to remember, there was a Marianne Faithfull song called Don't Make Promises You Can't Keep. The government's been doing that. It's been making promises in Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid that we can't keep. Some people have talked about these enormous, what's called unfunded liabilities in Social Security and Medicare. But it is probably in the last 5 years we've started to talk more about it. But, I think in the somewhat near future, it's going to start coming home to roost that people are just going to have to address this problem.
Yeah. Well, and imagine if somebody like Bernie Sanders became president.
You're exactly right.
It'd be the end of the country as far as, any kind of fiscal responsibility. And they're not being fiscally responsible now. Well, what's the percentage approximately of those unfunded liabilities or whatever, that would be Social Security? If you could break down those three, let's say the 100% of these, the 70% that's already spent, okay? If you were to break down those three, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid.
Well, for the next fiscal year, that is the 2019 fiscal year, which starts on October 1st, Social Security will be about $1.04 trillion. Medicare will be about $780 billion. Medicaid will be about $400 billion. And that's the Medicaid part is half the federal government and half by the states. So the big chunk of it is in Social Security and Medicare, but also Medicaid. And there are ways to deal with it. For Social Security, one way is to extend the retirement age. But the last president that was able to do that was Ronald Reagan. George Bush talked about it, but never got around to doing it. So that's a moderately simple way of dealing with that problem. We could let people, in fact, I was Congressman Nick Smith's chief of staff after the contract with America. I took a leave from Hillsdale to be out there for a year and a half. And we introduced a bill that would have let you take 2% of the 2 percentage points of your Social Security tax and put it into a private savings.
Just 2%. Just 2% out of the 100% Social Security.
Well, no, out of the 12.4% tax.
Oh, okay.
We're going to let 2 percentage points. But that's no longer possible because now there's the longer you wait, of course, the more people there are retired.
Yeah.
And now there's more revenue going out of Social Security than is coming into Social Security. So now they're at a deficit. And, of course, the longer you wait, the bigger the problem becomes.
Is there a way in which they could revise Social Security so they say, okay, and I don't want to sound like a progressive, but okay, if you're a millionaire, maybe you don't need your Social Security payments. Maybe those can go for the guy down the street. Well, actually, the guy down across town or whatever, you know, something like that.
I think that you're exactly at the right point. Frederick Bastiat in 1850 wrote a book called The Law, and he said, legalized plunder is when the government takes from some people and gives to others. Realistically, how Social Security is structured today, the single mom with three kids in the city of Detroit that's working at the Walmart pays taxes so that Warren Buffett gets a Social Security check. That does not make sense. And so now what you would probably have to do is say, okay, if you're over the age of 55, we're not going to reduce your Social Security benefits because you've been planning on that. But if you're less than 55, we're going to say, hey, this is going to become more means-based. Maybe we'll set a limit on how much Social Security you can receive, but extending retirement makes a big difference. In 1935, when Social Security started, the average life expectancy was 63, and you retired when you were 65. As we age, a program designed this way is simply not feasible over the long term.
What was the change in age during the Reagan years?
Well, it was gradually extended. If you are, I forget the exact ages, but if you were born, they did it where if you were born before a certain date, you could get it at 65. And then full retirement is extended out for ages after that. So they basically did it to what I was saying is that, okay, if you are at a certain age, we're going to presume you made your decisions based on that. But if you're younger than that, here's what you need to retire. And so full retirement age, I forget exactly what it is, but I know for my wife it's 66. So if you can look on the Social Security website and it'll give you what the retirement age is, but they basically extended it out to be 67 or so if you're relatively young.
Okay, as far as Medicare and Medicaid, could some changes be made
easily
to make it more solvent?
Yes. But what the private sector did was it moved to health savings accounts where we have a high deductible policy, and then you get a certain amount into your health savings account, and you decide how much you're going to spend of that. So if Medicare and Medicaid were that way, the whole way of delivering healthcare services would change. For example, I tell my students or ask them, when you're taking somebody out to dinner, when do you tell them you're picking up the tab? And the answer is after they've ordered. Medicare doesn't work that way. It tells you they're picking up the tab, and in addition, it tells the waiter they're picking up the tab.
Yeah.
So the waiter brings out the $500 bottle of wine, and you go, okay, great, I'll have that. So right now, the way Medicare and Medicaid is structured, particularly Medicare, is to invent very expensive things that Medicare will pay for regardless of whether it does a very good job or not. If we changed it to the way the private sector has done with health savings accounts, you would now say, how much does that blood test cost here versus over there, rather than saying, oh, does Medicare pay for it? And then what would happen is people would start to compete. And you'd see like Walgreens or whatever would have a nurse practitioner at their pharmacy, and you'd walk in, they'd charge you $10 and say, oh, your kid's got pink eye, and here's a prescription for it. So it would all be based on the way most of other products and services are done in the U.S. It would be based on the person that's buying it is the person paying for it, so they respond to increases in quality and reductions in price. That's not the way the system works right now.
Yeah, and we see, quite frankly, it's a different issue to some degree, but we see the abuses of the state-run medical system in England, where you have this ill baby or child, Alfie or whatever, and the parents want him to live. The child apparently wants to live. And the bureaucracy is, no, we will not let that. And even Italy and the Pope are interfering and saying, look, you know, bring the child here and we'll medically treat him. But England is saying no. And it's like, whoa, this is, life and death decisions, but it's based ultimately on the bottom line.
Sure. It is central planning. The central planner decides. I mean, in Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act got us even more into that, telling you, okay, here's what health insurance has to look like. Your employer has to provide it, da-da-da-da. So all these changes are all driven by the benevolent dictator that knows more about what we need in our insurance than we do. So, again, if we moved Medicare and Medicaid to a system where when you're 67 and you need to have, like I said, need to have a blood test, you'll look around and see what's the least expensive and most efficient way of getting that blood test. Today, you don't ask that. It's just, does Medicare pay for it? And you imagine when you're spending $800 billion a year at the federal government, imagine how much fraud there's going to be as
well. Yeah, absolutely. All right, let me ask you this. The deficit that you're talking about, the ongoing regular deficit, and you said for this coming fiscal year it's about $1 trillion in that zone. Okay. So is it possible that because of tax cuts, because of the growing economy, I mean, even since President Trump was elected, it's my understanding the stock market grew by about 30% from that date to the present, you know, with ups and downs here and there, but overall ups. Is it possible that the deficit could be shrunk just because there's more revenue because of the tax cuts?
Well, the deficit could be. We saw that, in fact, there were 4 years of surpluses that were run during the Clinton administration when the House Republicans came in and put restrictions on what spending could be and made some other changes. But again, you really have to deal with these mandatory spending that goes out the door no matter what it is. It is probably not possible to grow the economy fast enough to balance the budget just because of these items. Now, it's not impossible to do this. In fact, it's interesting that the state of Michigan has some really good parts of its constitution.
We have about half a minute left. Go ahead.
Well, what you would do is you'd say, okay, the Social Security spending has to be appropriated every year. And the Medicare spending has to be appropriated every year. And if, you know, not enough money comes in, then everybody gets, 90% of what they would have gotten.
Oh. Yeah, that makes sense. Huh. All right, we're out of time, basically, but thank you so much for joining us. At Gary_Wolfram, WOLFRAM, that's your Twitter handle?
That's my Twitter, and I'm in a contest with John Miller, who is another professor here, who has the most Twitter followers, so I'd appreciate anybody following me.
Okay, hillsdale.edu for more information as well. Thank you, sir. All the best.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.